everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. And this edition of Mind Talk here on Friday, which is when we take a look at events in our world from a psychological perspective. And today, we have a real treat. I am very pleased to introduce to you Dr. Tracy Weiland, who is a prominent thought leader and speaker on the impact of technology on society, work, and careers. A former visiting scholar at Stanford University, she has held leadership positions at Apple, HP, and Cisco Systems. She's also authored 11 books, including her most recent book, Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. And she is here today to offer her insights into the hiring outlook for 2017 and maybe give you a sneak peek into 2018 as well. Dr. Weiland, welcome back to Mind Talk.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Now,
excuse me.
There's so much for us to cover that I want to get right to it. You say that there are five emerging areas for the future, and area number one is the geezer economy. Excuse me?
So, yes, you know, North America and United States, you know, we're aging. Baby boomers are turning the age of 65 at the rate of 10,000 per day. So if you think about it, by 2020, about, you know, 20 to 30% of our population be over the age of 65. Well, that in itself creates an economy, because as we get older, we need different kinds of products. We need different kinds of services. We have different perspectives on where we live, how we spend our time, and all of that creates jobs. And so I look at that as a big job creator moving forward.
And you say that humans today can expect to live to 115, and babies born today could live to be 150 years old? This is not
science fiction? No. Research is showing that through really biomedicine and genetic, you know, editing our baby's DNA, all of the advancements in science is that we can expect to live longer, and then our children will grow up and live longer too, which is good because then they could take care of us.
Oh, there you go.
But, right. There's always a positive to this. We just all hope that we don't stall out at age 95, you know, and just spin there. But, you know, that creates other dilemmas for us as humans, because many of us expect it to only work for 20 or 30 years. And if you think about it, we might be working for 50, 60, 70 years to be able to support ourselves into retirement.
That is a really scary thought. But given the numbers that you're quoting, it makes a lot of sense. And already you're saying that elder care is a $316 billion business. No wonder there is job openings available.
That's right. So if you think about it, as we age, we need a lot more support and services. It could be occupational therapists. It could be physical therapists. It could be nurses, doctors, home health aides, you name it. As we get older, we're not going to the doctor once a year anymore. We might be going once a week. And that drives demand for people to support us. We also need to think about where we're going to live. Are we going to move to a retirement community? Well, that creates jobs there. Are we going to stay at home and bring health care to the home and services in the home? That creates jobs there. Just the fact that we want to stay young, you know, that drives jobs in the beauty industry or hip replacement or knee replacement. You think about it, there's a lot of jobs that are just created by the fact that we're getting older.
And the numbers that you quote are really significant and I think important. The anti-aging business, for example, you expect it to bring in almost $217 billion by the year 2021.
That's right. So staying young is big business. If you think about it, you can pretty much get any kind of beauty treatment, vitamin, surgery. You know, there's so many more things out there to help us stay young, and that creates jobs, whether it's in the storefront area where you go in for your cosmetic treatments, or it might be in the hospitals, or it might be people who are helping you with personal training. to keep fit in the gyms. So there's a lot of jobs just created by the fact that as we get older, we really don't want to get old. We want to stay young and beautiful and keep active. And so that creates jobs.
You know, the next category that you talk about actually surprised me. You indicate the trade workers is a job market area that will be in demand. Given that so much attention and energy is placed on technology, I was really surprised to see trade workers.
Well, the reason behind that is exactly what you've stated, is that there has been a lot of emphasis over the years for people to go to college, pursue technology jobs or white-collar jobs. And so as part of that, the pipeline is decreased for people in the trades. And so as they retire, we now need people to be able to replace the jobs, whether it's stonemasons or brick masons or people who electricians or carpenters or roofing, you name it. There's a lot of jobs that are opening up just by the fact that people are retiring. And I think it's good to have a skill. A lot of parents are telling their kids, as you're in college, don't forget to also have a key skill in case you don't get a job right away, in case it doesn't work out. So think about, you know, different kinds of jobs that you use your hands can be really in high demand.
So plumbers, glaziers, pipe fitters, all of that, it hasn't gone away. You can get work in those areas.
Yes, and in fact, I had this uncomfortable experience over the holidays where my heater went and my dishwasher went and my refrigerator went, and I brought in, it was very hard to find someone, but I needed someone who was skilled in all three and four areas, and that's where the money is in the future, is if you can do electric and water and heat and air conditioning, you're almost like a one-stop shop. And if you think about it, the future is having a smart home where all of our devices are connected. So if you are oriented towards the trades, I encourage you to really learn the technologies, but learn more than one appliance so that you can demand more for your time and really become an entrepreneur in the trade. So it's a vibrant area and something that people do make a great living on.
Now, what kind of personality types would you say would be better suited for work in the trades?
So it depends. You know, if you're in the trades, it's someone, you could be very introverted if you're working for someone else. You know, you can be very precise, very detailed. It's very predictable. And so if you like that kind of work, the challenge is really fixing the problem that you know very well. If you decide to start a business, however, in the trades, then you may want to be more of a take-charge person, an extroverted person who has to really go out and market themselves and as well as have the skills to run the business. So I think it depends on what you're looking for. But let's face it, you could be, very shy working in the trades because if your whole job is, you know, fixing the electricity or the electric box or the air conditioner, you might be by yourself for a lot of hours. And so that might suit you quite well.
Interesting. And portfolio careers, you're saying that they become mainstream. I give up. What's a portfolio career?
So a portfolio career is pretty much being an entrepreneur. You're marketing and developing your own business around a particular skill. So I give an example of, let's say you are a marketing person. You might be securing freelance jobs from corporations for event planning, but at the same time, you might be working on a project and getting paid for it to do social media for a radio station. You might be also copywriting for marketing brochures. So basically, you're putting your skill out there and you're really applying for a number of projects or freelance work to be able to develop your business. And let's face it today, 1 out of 3 people in the U.S. are now freelancers.
I didn't realize that. 1 out of 3, that's a pretty high number.
It is. And if you think about it, years ago, many people lost their jobs and they went out to temporary work, contract work, freelance work to be able to tide them over. Many of them just went mainstream and developed businesses around it. If you talk to our younger generation, they really feel like they want to be more in control of their jobs and careers, unlike their parents, they don't want to be on what they call the corporate treadmill. And so many of them, because of the internet, can find more jobs on these freelance, really marketplaces, whether it's Upwork or Elance, which now became Upwork, going to temp agencies, and really even LinkedIn has consulting positions and freelance positions posted now, so you can really make a living out of freelance work.
So it sounds like a portfolio career, in essence, is the individual being a one-stop shop.
That's right, or really creating a career around a series of projects and freelance works or contracts that really use your skill set. And that's very energizing for a lot of people because they want to be able to do what they do very well, whether it is finance or marketing or HR, and to be able to really create choices around your career set by picking different projects and adds variety and opportunity.
And so the person who's doing that, I would think that they would need to be creative. They'd certainly need to be organized. Are there any other skills that you would recommend for somebody in a portfolio career frame of mind?
Sure. So the thing to remember about when you're starting a business is that you have to wear many hats. Because if you're taking on different projects from people, you need the skills. So let's just go back to our marketing person. You need to have that skill set. But at the same time, you need to be able to be technical so you can set up a website. Now, you can get people to help you, but that costs money. You also need to be able to figure out your finances. You know, do you understand cash flow? Can you keep yourself, surviving if you don't get a couple of contracts? Can you invoice people? If you bring people onto your team, you know, can you manage payroll? So being an entrepreneur or a business owner really takes someone who really has to be very strategic, I would say somewhat structured in their approach to be able to run a systematic business and at the same time have that skill as we discussed, whether marketing or finance or HR.
So this is not for someone who gets bored easily.
Well, actually, a lot of business owners do like running businesses because they found that the corporate world was too boring for them. They didn't like going in and being in a world where they were told, this is your job and stay between the lines. And so many business owners do find it very stimulating to be able to run the business because you have to wear so many hats. But at the same time, you need to have that structure so that you can keep your business afloat, so to speak. And so it's high energy, and some would say it's even much more stressful than working in a corporate job.
I can see that, because it's certainly if you're creating your own portfolio, you're working for yourself. And if you can't tolerate the ebb and flow of finances, this might not be the job for you.
That's right. So you really have to think through, and I always recommend that people think about it before you jump. You know, always try it on the side first. Maybe it's weekend work or night work, and see and talk to people who are doing it to see if you're really cut out for something like that.
It did not surprise me to see cybersecurity on the list. What's happening in the world of cybersecurity?
You know, I don't care who you talk to, but cybersecurity is a safe bet, and I say that sadly. Cybersecurity experts are expected to grow the demand 53% over the next 2 years. Businesses are expected to spend over $100 billion in cybersecurity over the next 4 to 5 years. And if you think about it, the jobs are everywhere. It's at the federal government where you'll need clearance. It'll be at state and local. It'll be working for companies, healthcare systems, universities, and sadly, even each of us. I'm sure everyone knows someone or themselves have been hacked in some way. And so we need people who can really protect our data systems and our networks. And, you know, the demand is so high now that companies are willing to really, if you have the skill set and the capabilities, they're willing to train you in it. talked to many universities. They are developing certifications in cybersecurity. The Cisco Network Academy, which I remember fondly from my days there, is now adding in Cybersecurity Academy courses as well as certifications. So if you think about it, this is a brand new area, and if you have the skills and the aptitude, this could be a very fruitful career for you.
You know, it's sad that we have to pay so much attention to cybersecurity. It's also great that there are so many job opportunities. What kind of personality is best suited for cybersecurity work?
So actually, if you are very detailed, enjoy technology, if you are out on hackathons, if your coding is very stimulating for you, software coding, you can be a loner because you can work by yourself at home. You know, if you have a technology bent, cybersecurity could be the kind of field that you can get interested in, as well as an interest in solving complex problems, because really hackers really are challenging us in ways that we've never been challenged before. In fact, many ethical hackers are really just hack and then to prove a point that a software system can be broken or a network can be invaded. If you're an avid gamer, that might be a signal that that you're, you know, interested in this kind of work. So I think it's, you know, you look at where you're spending your time, what your hobbies are, and you might be the perfect fit for someone in cybersecurity.
You mentioned hackathon. That would be what?
So a hackathon is when, you know, you go out and you break code. Facebook sponsors and had over the years a lot of hackathons, and people can find them online. And so basically, you know, I write a software program and then you try to break it to show me that you're smarter than me and better than me. Those are the kinds of people who go into ethical hacking, people who really really have an interest in security in an ethical way, but also are very challenged by software coding and computer systems and networks.
Interesting. The person who is sort of a chatty Charles, if you will, is cybersecurity not a good plan for him?
Well, it depends. You know, you could go into the sales side. So
okay.
If you're a very outgoing person, you know, we need people. You know, when you think about companies, there's all functional areas. There are functions that are really dedicated to people who are very comfortable working by themselves, really don't need the stimulation of being with other people. But if you think about it, there's a plenty of jobs that really require people interaction. Sales is one of those. Marketing is another. Customer service, HR, all of these areas that require you to interact with people means that you get stimulated by engagement with people and you enjoy people. You know, if you don't enjoy being with people, then I would migrate away from those kinds of jobs. But if you get very excited about being with people, then I would certainly have you think about those kinds of positions rather than something where you would stay in the back room somewhere and not have any interaction.
I would suggest that there are too many people who don't like people and they're doing customer service jobs, which is not a good thing.
You know, customer service, it's a very interesting because now you can do it on the phone. And that's very interesting because as you probably experience, as I do, is a lot of them are chatbots, so they're not even people anymore. But there are a number of people who are working from home, probably alone, who are answering questions about airline tickets or ordering flowers, and they're reading scripts. So you could be at home, right, and very, you know, a loner and be a tele, you know, customer service person. So I don't want to discount that job because if you stick to the script, when you're done with the script, you basically elevate the call to the next level of service. So it could be a good fit for some people.
Really interesting. Tracy, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want you to talk to us about the tech effect. Tracy, talk to us about the tech effect. What do you mean by that? What kind of jobs are available in that area?
So the tech effect is really means the jobs that are created by because of the success of the new technologies. So there is high growth in science, technology, engineering, and math jobs. We know that. They outpace other occupations at a ratio of 27 to 1. But each time you have a new Apple computer created, or a Google created, or an Amazon created, they lead to other jobs, not necessarily in technology. So let me just give you an example. So Apple did a study in 2015, and they looked at, because we exist as Apple Computer, how many other jobs did we create, not only in the U.S., but globally? What they came up with is that they were responsible for 2 million jobs in the U.S., because when you think about it, because of Apple, you have Apple stores. So that creates jobs for retailers, right, for people to work in the stores. Because people go to Apple stores, they may take a break and go to a restaurant down the street. Because of Apple making iPhones and different products, they have created jobs for manufacturers. They have created jobs for people who make cases. You know, they have created jobs who develop programs for their iWatches. So the exciting thing about technology is that it just doesn't mean engineering jobs. If you think about Microsoft and you go to Seattle, how many people are really employed in Seattle as lawyers, dentists, school teachers, cooks, right, retail clerks, because of the fact that Microsoft has settled there, right, and has their headquarters there and creates jobs. So it's quite exciting. And the one that today you read a lot about in the news is Amazon. Amazon has now over 360,000 employees, but Amazon is everywhere. You're either seeing Amazon, delivery people, so they're creating jobs for UPS, for FedEx. They're creating jobs for truck drivers. They're creating jobs for customer service people. You know, you name it. So the exciting thing about technology is that it not only creates jobs in technology, but it creates many jobs around, or the support jobs in different neighborhoods and areas where we live.
I think I'm still a bit aghast at the 360,000 employees that Amazon has. It sounds like, even if you don't think about yourself as a creative person, if you can recognize that you're a thoughtful person, no matter what field you're interested in or what part of what field, you can probably figure out a place that you could fit.
And that's right. And I think the one shift that has happened from the past to the present is that we have become a very skill-based economy. So yes, you can work for an Amazon if you're skilled in an area, whether it's the marketing or the finance, or you're a lawyer, or you're a customer service specialist or a social media specialist. So I think as people evaluate companies, not only look at the company fit, but also look at what skills you can match to the company's openings, because that's what they're really looking for. So if you have worked in retail, can you bring that retail skill over to an Apple store or over to an Amazon, marketing person, so that you can bring that skill of customer service and retail capabilities into one of these growing firms?
It's beginning to sound as though there is a lot of opportunity and will continue to be a lot of opportunity and growing sectors for new jobs.
Yes, there's always going to be very new sectors that will emerge and that will continue to create jobs. As I look out there, most of them are in the technology field, and so I think people need to be prepared for that. But if you get in early, so I was just talking to someone this morning, because in Detroit, they just finished the auto show. A lot of cars are getting very technical, right? They're really becoming autonomous cars and smart cars. But you need people to design the cars, manufacture the cars, repair the cars, sell the cars. So these are areas that can create jobs. If you really have an interest, right, in the wherewithal to really say, yep, I want to put my foot out there and get in with something that's emerging.
Well, and with a lot of the cars nowadays, you need somebody who can explain the car to you. I mean, it used to be you could open the car, put in the key, and you were ready to go. Not so much anymore.
No. Cars have really become software in a box. We used to say hardware and mobile devices on wheels, but it's really getting down to software in a box. I was just following yesterday an autonomous car, the Google one, that's out by me, and it's pretty distracting when you're following a car that doesn't have a driver. Now, I know there was someone in the back seat monitoring the car, but, you know, you're just looking ahead of you saying, this is the future. I'm going to be following cars or in a car where I am not going to be in the front seat controlling the system anymore.
It's almost surreal to think about it.
It is, and I watched it carefully. It kept to the speed limit. It did the proper signal. It made a right turn, went down the neighborhood street, and then pulled over and did a parallel park. So it was quite fascinating to watch when it's really on the road with you. You know, you always see pictures of it. You can go to auto shows and see them. But when you're on the road with it, it's a completely different, surreal feel, as you mentioned.
You know, I also think about as the markets are growing and new markets are emerging, that clearly there are some jobs that are going to all but disappear. I think about the cab drivers or the Uber drivers or the Lyft drivers. You know, the more that we get to a place where these cars are not, don't need a person to drive them, are you going to need Uber to come pick you up?
Right. So, you know, here's the message I give people. Every job and any job can be replaced or displaced by hardware, automation, or software. That's a reality. Whether it's the ATM machine replacing parts of the banking jobs or functional areas, right, or functions. Whether it's the gas attendant, right, being replaced by the automated gas tank, you know, or filler. So then you say to yourself, well, what do I do? And that's where we need to think about, one is learn technology in your industry. So I always say learn two technologies that are coming in your space. If you're in manufacturing, learn about robotics, learn about 3D printing. Right now, those are very, very key technologies that are transforming manufacturing. But also go out and develop other skills. So talk to your manager if you're working in a company about doing some lateral rotations so that you can continue to build your skill set and be relevant as the company changes. And also think about joining teams that are implementing technology in your company. So you might say, well, I'm a marketing person, not a technology person. Well, you know what? Technology teams need users. They need people to volunteer as they're rolling out technology systems or new websites. They need people to say, yes, I'll be a user, you know, test the system for you and give you my input. So think about ways that you can kind of get your hands dirty with technology so that you can be comfortable with it. Because, you know, let's face it, technology is a language. And once you learn it and keep using it, it gets easier and easier.
It sounds like, contrary to what some folks tend to think, certainly about the new world of work, which is that I can't do it. It sounds like if you really focus on what you can do, ways that it can work for you, that shift in how you think about the new technology world will in and of itself open up areas of possibility.
Yes, and I think the key thing which you just hit on is that you have to start taking responsibility for your own career and where you want your life to go. The case in point, as we discussed earlier in the show, is that you are living longer, and we need to think thoughtfully about the direction that we want to take our lives and how we're going to really fund it. Because you may not be working for the same company today that you will be working for tomorrow, because you might outlive that company. So having more clear objectives about where you want your life, what kind of opportunities do you want to create for yourself with your career, and different kinds of jobs and different kinds of skills that you want to be able to really help you move yourself along. And that's a shift from the past. In the past, we go to work, They would tell us what to do. We would get specialized in an area. We would stay in one company for the whole retirement phase, right? And that isn't really how it's working anymore. So we have to be a little more thoughtful about our own careers.
In along those lines, how should one think about their longevity in a particular job at a particular level? Is 1 year not enough? Is 2 years too much? How should they think about that?
Well, I'm a big fan of metrics. So whenever you move into a job or responsibility, you need to set up some goals for yourself and, of course, sit down with your manager and make sure that, one, that you're learning while you're there and that you're creating success and measurable objectives for yourself so that as you achieve things, you either get rewarded through monetary means or promoted or given different visibility opportunities. So it's really, but if you talk to managers today, they're less and less responsible for that and expecting you to be more and more responsible for this because they really want you to figure out where do I want to be 5 years from now? And having those kinds of dialogues as you join firms is welcome today. You know, I would say to my employees, the job that you have today that I hired you for is not going to look anything like this job 1 year from today because of you. You are going to be really the CEO of this job. You are going to create it because you are the expert. You know what we need to do to move the firm ahead, the department ahead. And so that's a big shift from the thinking of the past, of telling me what to do, to rather saying, here's what I need, or here's the strategy I'm thinking about to really move our department ahead or my own career ahead.
So, you know, from years past, you did what your boss told you, period, end of story. And maybe you stayed in that job and maybe you got a promotion in 5 years, 10 years, whatever. Nowadays, I want to make sure that I'm hearing you correctly. You actually can go to your boss, your manager, and say, here's what I want to do. I'm not waiting for you to give me an assignment. I am telling you the kind of assignment that I wish to take on.
Well, okay, so let me just clarify this. So when you join a firm, you know, the reason you're getting hired by the firm is because you have a skill set and you're going to make a contribution to the firm that is positive to the profit of the firm or the progress of the firm. So walking in and saying, you hired me as a marketing person, but what I really want to do is social media marketing, you know, and you didn't hire me for that, that's not productive. What's productive is I'm hiring you, you're an event planner, you go out and execute events. Then you let me know that in addition to events, you'd like to learn about social media and you'd like to start to get some skill sets and opportunities in that area. So you're approaching me as a manager to say, I'm a really good event planner, but I also have another interest in expanding my skill set in social media. So when you're hired for a company, you have to remember they're paying you to do a job, but at the same time, you are becoming the expert in your field and can help contribute and grow the company through expansion of your own job. Does that make sense?
It does. And for many, I would think that's kind of an exciting prospect and an exciting shift. For those who've been in the job market for a while, maybe not so much. It really depends on the individual.
Yes, and I think that it also depends on the company. I still meet companies today that are very resistant to employees taking ownership of their careers, asking for visibility, asking for lateral moves, and asking for opportunities. If you find that you're in one of those companies or working with a manager in one of those companies, then you really need to start thinking about where is there a better place for you inside the firm that you can move to or outside the firm. And that's the whole idea of taking ownership of your career is if it's not working for you where you are now, well, you need to take ownership of fixing that for yourself. You know, so maybe the firm that you joined was right for the training opportunities, but as you're maturing and you're becoming more skilled and you're hitting a wall, well, maybe it isn't right for you anymore. Always tell people don't quit your job until you have another one and test things out, because the grass always will look greener on the other side. So make sure that you're really thinking through and trying things and having discussions before you make the leap.
Paying attention to the company culture then is a significant part of you taking responsibility for your career.
Culture has become very big. I meet with a lot of companies today because they say culture is really the corporate glue today. And in a couple of ways. One is, as companies are much more globalized, if you are an employee working for example, an Amazon or a Google, and you're overseas, there's an expectation that if I interact with you locally or abroad, then I'm going to have the same experience. I think an easier example is Starbucks. There's an expectation that if I go into Starbucks in the United States or overseas, that I'm going to have the same kind of customer service. That's culture. That's really creating a consistency of an experience. But at the same time, culture is being able to understand how to get things done. Sometimes people call it politics. It's really understanding inside the firm, how do things get done? You know, I moderated a panel that had four different types of companies on it. And we asked them, a young woman stood up and said, you know, I got shut down in a meeting because I projected and raised my hand and gave an idea. What do you think about that? Well, one woman said, you know, in my company, that would be welcome because we need people to offer their ideas and be very bold. Another woman stood up and said, you know what? In my company, that would be inappropriate because your manager is the one that's supposed to socialize ideas for their employees. So actually, you would have been expected to understand the culture is to tell your manager. And the third one said, you know what? I'm not sure how it would go over in my company because we're a very family-oriented culture. So when you sit in a meeting, you have to look at the people around you as brothers and sisters. So was your idea alienating to a sibling? So it just depends on the culture of the company, and you really have to understand the rules of the company. And that's how you learn when you join companies. That's what onboarding's about, talking to HR, talking to your manager, and really reading the company blogs and websites to understand how do I act to get my ideas socialized and achieved.
So perhaps maybe more than ever, it's really important to do research about the company that you're interviewing for before you get there, before the job is offered.
Yes, I think a lot of people get very excited today that they're getting offered a job. But rather, you should go in and use that interview time to explore a company and meet as many people as you can and vet the job as much as they are vetting you. Read the press releases. Go to the website. Reach out on your social media to other employees who might be working at the firm and ask them, you know, what is it like to work there? What are some of the pros? What are some of the cons? You know, what should I expect? Because you really want to be able to join a company that is a good fit for you, because if you're a happy employee, you're a much more productive employee.
Absolutely. Tracy Weiland, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'd like for you to offer perhaps some websites that might be useful in terms of researching companies beyond the company's website itself. Dr. Tracy Weiland, earlier on in the program, I introduced you as someone who had a tremendous impact on a tremendous awareness on the impact of technology in society, work, and careers. And certainly we've been talking about technology throughout our conversation today. And technology clearly includes the internet. And there are sites on the internet that offer all kinds of information. I was recently told about, I think it's Glassdoor. .com, and then I think there's another one, glassceiling.com. I don't know if that's an accurate website address or not.
So there's many websites out there that you can find out about companies and companies' culture. Glassdoor.com, payscale.com, salary.com, The Muse. There's many websites today, and I even think LinkedIn is giving insights, providing people feedback on what it's like to work in a company. But you don't have to just go to the websites. I mean, you can look at, follow them on social media. You know, look at the tweets. Look at, you know, look at what people are saying about them on Facebook. Look at, join the employee groups on LinkedIn or Yahoo, and really get some insight to, you know, what's happening there. And I would also talk to customers. Customers can be very honest about their interactions with different kinds of companies. And, of course, recruiters. Not only the recruiters that the company hires, but external recruiters. External recruiters are pretty savvy about, you know, what companies' cultures are like or what it's like to work there. And they can give you a comparison to what it would be like to work at a similar or like company. So I think there's a lot of resources out there today. And if you really are lost, just type in Google, how do I find out about a company culture? And all of these websites and resources will pop up.
I had no idea that there were so many. It's amazing. All right. Let me ask you a couple of questions just about a person's individual style. If I am a workaholic, I much prefer to work than do anything else. Of the jobs that we've talked about so far, are there some that I would be particularly well suited to or no?
Well, you know, if you're a workaholic, you can make work out of any job that you have, quite
that's
frankly,
true.
Because that's what workaholics do.
That's true.
But, you know, the way, if you're in consulting, you know, really, like if you're working for the McKinsey's and the Bain's, or if you're in public accounting, you know, these are companies that work 24/7. Then, you know, Hollywood is a 24/7 kind of industry. But high tech is also a 24/7 industry. Running your own business or being a business executive is a 24/7 industry. So if you are truly a workaholic and want to work all the time, then, you know, I would look for industries that will allow you to grow, you know, up the chain. And that's a lot of, you know, executives and management, so that you can work all the time if that's really what you love to do.
I would just add that if you love to work too much all the time, you're probably missing out on the rest of your life, which may not be a good thing, may not be healthy.
True, but a workaholic's mind is that they're happiest and they're having the most fun when they're working all the time. So to each his own, I guess.
And there you go. If I am somebody who is insecure, is there a place for me in the work world?
Well, you know, if you are insecure, then you may not want to pursue what I call line jobs, which is like sales and leadership types of positions, but you might want to be more of in the support, what we call the administrative world, which are support jobs, that you can support people who are taking the risk, and your job is really to support them, whether it's in the legal side, administrative side. You could be a speech writer. You could be, you know, even a librarian, for example. So, you know, it could be something where you're not in the limelight, but something that where you're not held to the fire if you make a mistake. But you can support other people who will give you guidance, and they'll take really the front line for you.
So it actually sounds like being a speechwriter would not be a good idea. Because there would be so many times that somebody would hate what I wrote.
Right. I would suggest being a copy editor,
Gotcha.
Correcting the grammar, correcting errors, that you're comfortable in your space, but you're not the person writing the actual lines of the speech.
Gotcha. If I'm squeamish, I probably don't want to work in much of healthcare or in the sciences, depending on which area of science I'm looking at.
Yeah, so I think if you're squeamish, you want to stay away from blood.
Probably.
anything in the military, anything in firefighting or police work, first responder work, anything that has to do with even animal care, because any of that can really elicit, sadness. So I would think about things that really don't have people in it or life in it, whether it's operating machines or working with numbers or working with text or working with technology, things that you don't really have to necessarily see human life or pain in any way.
We're clearly underscoring the need and the appropriateness of taking a look at who you are as an individual, your true likes and dislikes, as you embark on an employment or reemployment path.
Exactly. And I think that is a very good point, because I have a lot of people say, I want to work from home. I'm tired of driving into the office and getting dressed up and just all the hassle. And I said, actually, to work from home, you really have to analyze yourself. How structured are you? Because when you work from home, it's very easy to take a walk, do the laundry, take a nap, take the dog out, play with the cat. You find everything else to do than to work. And actually, if you are very structured, I think you're more inclined to really be able to work at home, because you'll set your alarm clock, you'll get up at 8 o'clock or whatever time, you'll, some people even get shower and dress just like they're driving to work, except they're going right into their office. You set up appointments, you keep a calendar, you do your follow-up, and then, you turn off or turn on each night. So I actually think you have to be incredibly structured to work at home, where a lot of people think it's easy. I think it's easier to go into an office because everything is there for you. You have the meeting set. There are people for you to talk to. There are people who will... you can rely on to help you with projects. So I think it's, you have to understand that about yourself. And I think that is very important when you're trying to make job decisions. The other area I hear a lot from people about is, I want a travel job. I want an overseas assignment, or I could see myself traveling. And I say to them, if you think you're, number one, do you travel a lot now? If you don't travel a lot now, then you really don't know what the experience is. Number two is, you have to be a loner. You really do. I can't tell you how much time I spend alone on the road, because you're stuck in an airport, or you're stuck in a delay, or you're stuck in traffic, or you're stuck in a hotel. And so you have to be comfortable with the idea of being alone and in foreign places on the road. So where it seems very exciting, the grass is always greener on the other side, sometimes you really have to evaluate, can I really do this job, or is it sort of something that I wish I could do, but it's really not a good fit for me?
Speaking of a travel job, certainly there was a time when you contacted your travel agent and the booking happened that way. Now, not at all so much. What about in 2018? Do you think that the trend towards travel will continue to be something that the individual does for him or herself?
That's a really interesting question, because if we go back to the beginning of your show where we talked about the geezer economy, as we get older, we're looking for things to do with our time. And according to the AARP, the 65-plus is actually driving leisure travel industry. People have a bucket list. People want to go see their family. People want to go just be able to hike and go to different parts of the world with their time. But as we get older, that's creating demand for people to help us with travel. And so if you think about it, the cruise liners, people who can specialize. I met a woman who actually was a travel agent but has recast herself specializing in travel for the 65 plus. Because as we get older, we really don't want to book our own travel. We may not be comfortable with the technology online, and we certainly don't want to carry our own luggage. And so I think you're going to see two different waves. One is the young generation, totally sufficient, self-sufficient, booking things online. And then you have the older population, which is growing and getting much larger, that will need much more services in the area. So I think it could be work both ways.
Interesting. Any other predictions for 2018?
For 2018, you know, I think the opportunities are really going to be, I'm going to hang my hat on technology. As I look forward to, that's where the growth is going to be, whether it's artificial intelligence, big data, autonomous cars, robotics. And so my encouragement to people is get into the ground floor. You know, you have to remember, I wasn't a technologist, but I joined technology firms because I got them before they really became mainstream, and I learned with them. So if you can get on to one of these new emerging areas, you could set yourself up for a long time.
Interesting. What's your sense of starting off with companies, with brand new startups, with theirs? Maybe one or two people and maybe a little bit of cash, but not so much. Is that a good investment or a wise investment?
It depends. I think when you join startups, you have to have the goal of what you want to get out of that startup. A lot of people approach a startup and say, I'm going to join this startup to make a lot of money. And then the startup goes under. And then you find yourself unemployed. And a lot of times you don't even get a severance. So I think if you say, I want to join a startup with the goal of, for example, autonomous cars. I'm going to join this autonomous car software startup because I see a path for myself working in the auto industry. Or I'm going to join this startup in the cloud industry because I see myself growing into larger firms, but I have to get the experience. So I think that's important. And that's, as a young person, you have to just be very careful. You can make a lot of moves when you're young. Everybody understands it. But then as you get older, you may want to think about where do I want to park it for a while or really make a contribution. For the flip side, for the older worker, the more seasoned worker, there's a lot of demand for people who understand process, structure, management. And you could find opportunities in private firms and small firms because they may not have the ability to find you or hire people to help them grow their company. So you might be able to get a position in some of these smaller firms that really suits your skill set very well. And I would look at that as well.
So the person who is 65 or 70 and retiring or about to retire can really look into finding employment that will be useful for them and for their employer, even after the quote-unquote retirement age.
Exactly. Particularly if you have specific skills that are in demand. Another area I tell people who are 65 plus, you know, go out to staffing firms. A lot of people contract their way into different industries. They learn as they go, so to speak. So if you're an accountant, go to account temps. Find out if they need accounting services. You know, start off, if you can't find anything, getting some contract work, pick up skills, pick up experience. Another area I encourage people who are more seasoned is look at places that are comfortable with seasoned people. So universities hire older people, the healthcare systems, government systems, public sector. Don't show up at the start, you know, at a startup's doorstep if the average age of the CEO is, you know, between 20 and 30. Look at where there's going to be a large population of people who are similar in age and experience to yourself, because it'll be a more comfortable environment for you and they'll be more open to you.
Makes perfect sense. For the folks who are listening now, who are on their path to looking for a job or a new job or a first job, really not quite sure what their personality type or style is, what do they do?
You know, there are so many personality inventories out there. The Myers-Briggs is a very old one. It's been revamped. I see it's online now. They actually have sites that you can figure out, take the test, figure out jobs and careers for yourself. You know, if you're in college, you might have the opportunity to talk to the, you know, the career centers about that. But ask your friends and family. They know you very well. What do I do particularly well? You know, what do I not do particularly well? And read job descriptions. Read them very, very carefully. If you are comfortable or doing 80% of the things in the job, then that could be a good fit for you. If you are not, then that's probably not something that you want to apply for. So for example, people tend to apply for jobs that are wish jobs, dream jobs from the self. Well, a company doesn't want to hire someone with a dream. They want to hire someone who can, you know, create results on day one. So they're looking for someone who's a direct match. But I think, you know, friends and family could be a good start of just saying, you know, what do you see me doing really well? What am I good at? But, you know, these personality tests are pretty available today.
Okay, terrific. Dr. Tracy Weiland, as always, you have given us lots of good advice, lots to think about in terms of the job market and the right personality fit. Is there a website or a place that people can look into to get more information about your thoughts and what you're doing?
Sure. Thank you. My website is tracyweiland.com, which is TracyWilen.com. I am on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter as Tracy Weiland. So I'm pretty easy to find. And I love hearing from people about, particularly about their successes in their careers and jobs.
Wonderful. Again, Dr. Weiland, thank you so much for joining us today on Mind Talk.
Thank you.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on Mind Talk and listening to what I would suggest is a really helpful conversation with Dr. Tracy Weiland. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. It is available to you on demand by going to the Mind Talk website, which is myndtalk.org. You can also download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. I hope you will choose one of those just to follow along with Mind Talk. Again, on demand 24/7, you can tune in whenever you like. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, that email is pamela@mindtalk.org, P-A-M-E-L-A at M-Y-N-D-T-A-L-K. talk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then that's what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.